Is the U.S. withdrawal from the U.N. Human Rights Council a big deal? Let's count the ways. First off, the reason makes this a noteworthy headline. The U.S. states that it is due to the constant bias against Israel at the U.N. So is the U.S. doing this for Israel? Well, in this debate, we will look at the reasons behind this U.S. decision, which once again shows how the U.S. has withdrawn from another major venue.
Washington, D.C., June 19th.
The United States is officially withdrawing from the UN Human Rights Council.
The reasons for the withdrawal?
We take this step because our commitment does not allow us to remain a part of a hypocritical and self-serving organization that makes a mockery of human rights.
And that's how Haley explains why the United States believes the UN rights body is hypocritical.
When a so-called Human Rights Council cannot bring itself to address the massive abuses in Venezuela and Iran, and it welcomes the Democratic Republic of Congo as a new member, the council ceases to be worthy of its name. Such a council, in fact, damages the cause of human rights. And then, of course, there is the matter of the chronic bias against Israel.
The UN Human Rights Council has a permanent standing agenda item on Israel's violations against Palestinians in the occupied territories. The U.S. wanted the agenda to be removed as part of changes it had sought at the council. Last month, the UN Council also voted to probe Israel's killing of Palestinian protesters in Gaza in the past few months. Israel praised what it called the courageous U.S. decision to withdraw from the Council. But others regretted the move.
Given the state of human rights in today's world, the U.S. should be stepping up, not stepping back.
The UN's human rights architecture plays a very important role in the promotion and protection of human rights worldwide.
The EU, Britain, as well as rights and aid groups were critical too. Human Rights Watch said,
"All Trump seems to care about is defending Israel."
Last year, the U.S. pulled out of the UN cultural agency UNESCO again over what it called bias against Israel following several resolutions in favor of Palestinians. The United States is the first member to withdraw from the UN Human Rights Council. This despite Washington's dark human rights record, which includes the detention of children separated from their immigrant parents at the U.S.-Mexico border, a practice that the UN has described as a serious violation of the rights of the child. Washington is also under fire over what has been described by rights groups as racial police profiling of black people and killing unarmed African Americans.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, we have Scott Rickert. He's a peace activist and a former American intelligence linguist who joins us from St. Petersburg. We also have Maxine Dauvert, journalist and political commentator, who joins us from New York. I'd like to welcome you both. Maxine Dauvert, let me first start with you. Is this a good day for Israel?
Good evening. I'm not sure it's a good day for anyone. But we also have to remember that this statement by the Ambassador Haley indicates that the withdrawal will not take place until the end of 2018. And that gives a lot of leeway for the Council to change and for the Council to look at what its real position and what its real agenda should be if it is, in fact, in protection of human rights. It certainly cannot continue with the same agenda it has had since its founding in 2006. That agenda is prejudiced against Israel. That agenda has not looked at the real violators of human rights at Venezuela, at North Korea, at the Congo, at China. And these are situations that need to be addressed. Not the continuous negative profiling of the only democracy in the Middle East, Israel, as a target. So if there is a change in the Council's approach, then perhaps there will be room for the United States to reconsider.
Scott Rickert, your response to Maxine Dauvert.
Well, first of all, I'd like to welcome Maxine back. I'm glad she recovered well from her cancer treatment. God bless you for recovering from that. I know it must have been devastating for you.
Stop, stop,
but,
stop.
That being said, unfortunately.
Stop, stop.
Okay. Anyway.
Stop. I have not had any kind of cancer treatment.
That being said, I disagree.
Let's move on.
I misunderstood. My apologies. So anyway, that being said, I completely disagree. The only democratic nation in the Middle East, obviously, it is not a democracy. We're talking about apartheid Israel, where it is an absolute occupation and suppression of an indigenous people who have been really displaced for now nearly 70 plus years. So this is not a situation where we're talking about a democracy. It is also a situation where we're talking about severe colonialism that was imposed on the region by the British Empire alongside the American Empire. At the time, at the opposition of the State Department in the 1950s under Truman. But unfortunately, Truman had some influential contacts that were very pro-Israel in the event. Now, unfortunately, we sit in a society that is very pro-Israel because of the indoctrination and the the inherent heuristic thinking that has been imposed on the American and much of the Christian community around the world through the modifications of the Bible in the early 1900s by Scofield. The Scofield Reference Bible made absolute changes to the reference to Zionism and the reference to Zion and Israel. And now you have an indoctrinated population in the United States. So I'm talking about 70 million evangelicals in the United States. And when you look at Nikki Haley, Nikki Haley is a product of this particular moment. The state in which she became a governor is 35% evangelical, and only about 1.1 million votes total were in her race to become governor, when in fact 35% of the 5 million population in the state of South Carolina are actually evangelical. So it's a very important voting bloc in the United States. The politicians understand it. The Israelis understand it. The military-industrial complex understands it. So when we look at the kinds of influences in the region, it has nothing to do with the democracy of Israel. It has everything to do with the influence in which the United States population, the British population, and other populations that have been indoctrinated around the pro-Israel ideology through their religion are supporting this initiative. Now, at this point, when it comes to the UN, absolutely, the UN has tremendous improvement it could do in the council, but certainly this has nothing to do with this decision.
Well, Maxine Dover, why is it that the U.S. feels like it has to withdraw from this organization with Israel being one of the factors? Is it because go ahead, fill in the rest.
Well, I think if you listen to whoever listens to the speech of Secretary of State Pompeo and Ambassador Haley, will hear the reasons. They're quite clear. The United States has finally said that it will not be party to a false narrative of having states put on the council who are themselves terribly guilty of human rights violations. That was not allowed in the original design of this council. If one looks at the designations of 2006, those nations who are guilty of human rights violations were not supposed to have the positioning and the pride of being part of a council that is supposed to be saving people and populations from human rights violations. First of all, let me correct for all of our audience. I have happily never had any connection to any cancer. So my colleague there in Florida, appreciate his empathy, but please give it to someone who needs it, not I.
Sure, sure. Well, let's look here, Scott Rickard. You have...
But with regard to what can the... Again, let me just remind that the statement was that the United States will withdraw by the end of 2018. I think we've recently had an experience with the on again, off again, and finally very strongly on again negotiations between the United States and North Korea. Changes can be made. Changes can happen, and they can happen very quickly when all of the parties wish them to be so.
Okay. Well, Scott Rickard, you have the U.S. Withdrawing from the UNHRC by the end of 2018. I'm glad Maxine Dover mentioned that. And then you have one of the reasons being Israel. And I don't want to focus on Israel as much as I appear to be. I'd like to kind of refocus that on the U.S. first here with my question to you. According to much of the statistics that comes out of the U.S. itself has a very high number of cases of abuse of human rights violations. And that covers a broad sector of the society within the U.S. What makes the U.S. think that it can lead this motion when it comes to the statements that Nikki Haley has made, such as human rights abusers continue to serve on and be elected to the council? What I'm trying to say is, what makes the U.S. think that it has the lead when it actually is one of the worst violators of human rights?
Well, that's an excellent question. I absolutely was thinking the same thing when Maxine was talking about how the U.S. Was rightfully calling out the atrocities of the Human Rights Council, when in fact the Human Rights Council should have been considering ejecting the United States based upon their human rights violations. In the United States, we have one of the most atrocious human rights violations. We have almost 10,000 people a year being killed by police officers. We have a tremendous amount of rapes. We have over 100,000 rapes a year in the United States. We certainly don't have one of the most quiet and non-violent societies on the planet. At the same time, the United States is heavily involved in warfare around the world, murdering millions in my lifetime, well over 25 million across almost every continent on the planet. So when you say that the United States is supposed to be leading the choices that are going into the human rights councils or any human rights organization, I would say that many individuals in the United States qualify. But as a government and an entity making foreign policy decisions, absolutely the United States is disqualified based upon its historical events and historical actions, not only within its own country, but certainly around the world among many countries that have suffered at the other end of American bombing, American warfare, American proxy wars, and American weaponry that's been sold, by the way, the number one arms dealer and the largest arms dealer in the history of the world. So this is absolutely hypocrisy.
Okay, Maxine Dover, unless you have a reaction, I'll move on to my next question.
Well, the reaction that I must have is that the United States is a society of laws and does recognize when there are problems and acts to correct those problems. It is a society that is responsible and acknowledges where there are mistakes. No society is perfect, certainly not the United States, not any society. But
name one of the mistakes
between the United States and the abusive members of
name
the
us
council,
one of the mistakes,
the Venezuelans, et cetera, is that the United States makes every effort to correct. One of the mistakes is some of the racial problems that have occurred in police departments and urban populations, and those mistakes have been recognized, and they are the police officers and the populations are working together to stop that kind of negative interaction that can result in deaths, both police
okay.
or
well, or then
population.
Let me ask you, how many mistakes does it take when you talk about police killings?
Maxine
Dover,
you
talked about police. I got to comment on this because you mentioned about the police department and the racial, I guess, problems. How many deaths does it take for this problem to get fixed when, according to a couple sources that I just Googled, a simple Google search, you have up to 1,000 or between 1,000 to 1,500 deaths at the hands of police in the U.S. from the beginning of the year until now? I would call that not a problem. I would call that a crisis.
I think that the police departments throughout the United States recognize that it is in fact a crisis and are acting to stop it and to correct the kind of social interaction and professional or lack of professional interaction, everything from body cams to retraining to community involvement is being pursued to stop that. You know, this Saturday there was a little baby who was baptized in St. Patrick's Cathedral. She is born 3 years after her father's death. Her father was an only son of Chinese-American parents, and when he was killed in his patrol car, not in pursuit, but simply sitting in his patrol car, attempting to protect the community to which he was assigned, he was murdered. And his wife, through medical technology, was able to have his child. That's police who are murdered. That's not any different than the murders of an innocent a member of the community. Both are crises. Both have to be stopped.
Okay, we got to move on now, and I'm going to come back to Israel with you, Scott Rickard. Just this past June, we're talking over five decades of what Human Rights Watch called Israeli violations of international law. Unlawful killings, forced displacement, abuse of detention, the closure of the Gaza Strip, and other unjustified restrictions on movement, as they said in the beginning of this report. So how is there bias against Israel when you have over five decades of Israeli violations of international law?
Well, clearly the bias is not against Israel. The bias is absolutely very pro-Israel when it comes to the United States, especially in the Security Council. If you look at the historical votes of the United Nations Security Council, typically 9 times out of 10, the only country that is opposing the Security Council decisions when they're anti-Israeli will be the United States. Once in a while, you'll have the United Kingdom stepping in, but typically it's the United States. So I think what we see here is a tremendous bias by the United States because of its very strong, close relationships. And this goes back to the 1950s. In the 1950s, you had the United States becoming very close with Israel because of the military operation that was going on when the Israelis basically went to war against their neighbors and stole in 1948 very much of the land that was basically given to them by the UN as part of the occupation that was agreed upon in 1948. And this particular movement was not sanctioned by the Balfour Agreement or any other agreement, but yet was lauded by many of the generals and many of the officers in the United States military because of the military operation. So they became very close in the 1950s with the Israelis, and the military cooperation, intelligence cooperation between the United States and Israel is the strongest in the United States. Of the Five Eyes, Israel is much closer in the surveillance, intelligence, and reconnaissance than any of the other intelligence partners. So the infiltration into the intelligence community and the military community, as well as the commercial communities in the United States and the religious communities, has shown an extremely strong relationship with Israel that is incredibly biased compared to any other country in the world.
Okay. Maxine Dover, go ahead.
Well, let me respond. You mentioned that there were 70 million evangelicals. Do you take away the logic or the intelligence of those evangelicals if they are looking at Israel as an ally and as a partner? Well, you mentioned the intelligence community. Do you also note that a significant part of the technology that is enabling intelligence is a product of Israeli entrepreneurship? And that these ideas are coming out of Israel because of the brain power of Israelis. And the fact of commerce, the commerce that Israel is doing, and in fact has offered recently water technology to Iran to help Iran alleviate water problems because Israel has developed technology that has made it water independent. This little country in the desert is now water independent and able to help countries around the world. Throughout Africa, Israeli water technology is giving people food, is improving crops. It is fascinating and it is fantastic. And with regard to 1948, Ben-Gurion, against the political advice of many of his colleagues, accepted the partition and said, okay, we'll take this small amount of land. And rather than the Arab partner, the Arab nation becoming a partner, they attacked. Five armies attacked the fledgling state.
Okay, I got to jump in and come to Scott Rickard. I'm sorry, Maxine Dover, because we're just running out of time.
Let me come to
Scott. Scott Rickard, let me come to you. Let me come to you with what Maxine Dover said about water and Israel. So Maxine Dover says that Israel is offering help with its technology to Iran. Let's first of all move away from that topic, because who knows what kind of motives Israel has, especially Netanyahu writing in Persian, which I'm sure he's not sending out messages on Twitter about that. But when you talk about Israel and water, why don't you tell Maxine Dover, why is it that Israel then is shutting off water practically for the people, the desperate people of Gaza? Or what about the fact that Israel is going after the natural resources, water included in the Golan Heights? Go ahead, Scott Rickard, in closing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it's a joke to think that Netanyahu could offer water to anyone when, in fact, they're absolutely starving and making the Gaza Strip into nothing more than a desert or an open ghetto, just like the Nazis. If you want to talk about smart people doing bad things, let's talk about the Third Reich. They were also smart people doing bad things. And I'm not discounting any intelligence in Israel. I'm saying very intelligent people, very enabled by financial institutions around the world, being among it the United States and Goldman Sachs and many of the other complicit criminals in the war crimes around the world. But yes, Israel is also creating extremely devastating weaponry and exporting that weaponry to countries like India and other countries around the world. India is one of the largest consumers of Israeli weaponry. So no, I don't agree with the fact that Israel is doing good things all around. Obviously, some good things are happening, but many, many bad things are happening. In fact, a majority of the things that Israel does to their neighbors and to others around the world has been devastating.
Thank you. We're going to have to, unfortunately, edit that. Thank you, Scott Rickard, a peace activist and a former American intelligence linguist. Maxine Dover, thank you very much. We're just fresh out of time. Journalist and political commentator from New York. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitovy, entire team in the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.